Good morning and welcome to the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton. You're in tune with WBCX 89.1 FM on your radio dial. We broadcast the Communication Corner every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, rebroadcasted Thursdays at 6 a.m. First-time listeners, we're happy to have you with us. We invite you to return. Regular listeners, we're glad that you're back. Please continue to tell your friends and colleagues about our broadcast. And by the way, one of the reasons you'll want to come back is that we have an outstanding lineup of guests. During the 10 months that we have broadcasted this program, I invite you to look at our photo gallery of guests. All you have to do is go to my Facebook page. That's Bill Lampton. Go to my Facebook page and look at the WBCX lineup that I have there. You'll recognize some of them, many who have come from out of town, many locally. We're thrilled with the people who are our guests. Another point, we always enjoy hearing from our guests. You can call the studio 770-538-4744, or you can reach me directly, 678-316-4300. Our topic today is looking at television from every angle. And by the way, I'd like to ask our program producer and station general manager, Christina Rhodes. Christina, I know you've got a few favorite TV programs. What are some of yours?
I do, Bill. I'm a fan of TV. I would have to say one of my favorite programs, and this won't be a surprise to people that know me, Dexter. It's my favorite show. It's a great show, very creative, and I'm a big fan of the art department because that's actually where my husband works in television and shoots commercials, and he works in the art department. So I love the set design and the art that's involved in decorating for shots. And then I'm really a fan of TV because it's part of my family history.
Now, tell us about that.
My grandfather was Jack Shepherd, and he was a director and producer for NBC in LA for many, many years. He had his own production company, Televane Productions, and was able to shoot for NASA the Voyager mission and had a live 5-day shoot that they did when the Voyager was passing through Saturn. And he was very involved in a lot of kind of innovative TV ideas in the LA area. He was the first to do student news that was actually on a PBS station in Los Angeles. And then many of my family members have gotten into television since then. And like I said, now even my husband. So I've been surrounded by TV most of my life, and I really enjoy it.
The media seems all of the media are in your genes.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Very much so. So you're excited about our guest today, Dr. Stuart Blakely, chair
I know him
of the Department
well.
Of Mass Communication at Brenau University, where WBCX is housed. We'll begin with a couple of observations. How long has TV been a part of our lives? Well, regular television commercial networks started capturing our attention in 1948. In those days, instead of watching stations through cable access, viewers relied on bulky antenna placed outside their homes. In fact, those of us who have blown out a few birthday candles and remember those days remember that there were only three networks, ABC, which critics called almost a broadcasting company, CBS, and NBC. Often when you wanted to switch from one network to another as a viewer, you would have to go outside your house and turn that huge antenna so it would point toward the signals that were coming from that network. My gosh, what a long time, what long way we have come. And I was telling Christina and telling Dr. Blakely before the program that I remember so well in my small town in Mississippi that I grew up, there was one small store that had the only television station in town in those early days. Spectators would gather around the window of the store, would look, would see all that jumbled white snow, which we see when we lose signals. And every now and then somebody would see the image of a person on there. All of the viewers would get so excited. Look, I saw somebody. They moved. Incidentally, back in those days, social observer Vance Packard discovered that there were more television antennas sold than TV sets because people wanted their neighbors to think they owned a set, and the antenna indicated there was a TV set in every house. So TV ownership became a status symbol. Then as TV programming developed, naturally, some critics emerged. Newton Minow, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, coined a phrase that many agreed with then and some do now when he called TV a vast wasteland. But because some parents welcomed television as an electronic babysitter, as their young children watched cartoons and needed no other entertainment. I guess that hasn't changed all that much.
People still watch the Mickey Mouse Club.
Still watch it. Early fans of television will remember the stark black and white screens, often small, frequently distorted by bad signals. And who would have guessed the brilliant colors we have now, the magically clear pictures through high definition, and the choice of hundreds of channels to watch if you want to pay for that privilege? Dr. Blakely and Christina will remember, at certain times in America's life, TV has helped us participate in major events that were shaping our future. In fact, we'll all remember that. The Kennedy assassination in 1963, and the same year, Martin Luther King's historic I Have a Dream speech, Hurricane Katrina, the destruction of the World Trade Center towers, and now, of course, the destruction in Japan. As Edward R. Murrow might have said, you were there through the magnified eyes of television. To learn more about the development of television and its impact on our lives, we're fortunate to have a highly qualified guest this morning, Dr. Stuart Blakely, chair of the Department of Mass Communication here at Brenau University, the home of WBCX-FM. And Dr. Blakely and I, one thing we know we have in common is that we both attended graduate school at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And Dr. Blakely and I wonder if we have any other bobcats listening out there today. Dr. Stuart Blakely, welcome to the Communication Corner.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
In addition to your academic duties, let's talk some about what the involvement that you have had outside the strict classroom itself, the involvement that you have had in TV production.
Okay. I've been in and around video production for, I stopped and calculated this morning, over 40 years, most of it in academics, but I've also been involved with cable broadcasting. I was the executive producer and director for a TV news show for a while in Illinois. And then when I came here to Brenau, we did 10 years of the Brenau News Forum. Some of you may remember that program that we had that came from the department. And we had a weekly half-hour news format show that we produced 52 weeks a year for 10 years. So we've got lots of these things sitting around. So I've had a good deal of production experience, I think.
As the old saying would go, you got a lot of those programs in the can.
Right. Yes. And I did do some radio as well. In fact, I started out, remember being 15 years old, sitting on the back of the trunk of my car, or my parents' car at the time, and listening to the radio and saying, I want to be a DJ. And when I got to college, I had my own radio show on the student network there at Michigan State University, where I started out. And so that was my first actual production experience.
Many of us had the dream of being a DJ at one time
yes.
or another. Some of us got to fulfill it. Some of us didn't. Yeah. I had a stint at that a couple of times myself and found it really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, getting to your involvement here with mass communication at Brenau, let's talk about what information and what skills do you teach mass communication students at Brenau that equip them to enter the marketplace with marketable skills.
Okay. The first thing that we emphasize is writing, because writing really is the basis for everything you do. You have to have writing skills. We want them to write for various platforms, different formats. And so they should be learning things like writing for television, for radio, for the internet, for blogs, for all those sorts of different platforms.
How would the writing differ for radio and for television?
Well, in TV, the writing is to complement the pictures. And in radio, the writing is to create the pictures in your mind. And so you have to be able to summon up different descriptive terms and terminology so that people can get that image in their mind that you want to convey.
So radio writing depends more on stirring the imagination.
Certainly. It's been called the theater of the mind. Mm-hmm. Television, you augment the visuals with information that you can't see there, or you highlight something that's important in the screen that people should be seeing.
And then what about for internet and blogs? What about that writing?
Internet and blogs are more along the lines of newspaper and print, where you have to create the need for the reader to go and get more information by reading the story. And so you have to construct the story to draw them through. They're not a captured audience like radio or TV. They have many different, you know, places they can go at once, where in radio, you're listening to the one station until you leave it. Or television, you're watching the one station until you leave it. In newspaper, you can just jump over to the next column and read something else.
So you begin with writing skills.
Certainly.
Where do you go from there?
Well, in our department, we like to give them skills that are practical as well. We are a liberal arts college here, certainly, but we like the practical skills. And so we have our new radio studio that we're broadcasting from. We've got video production equipment the students use, and they go out and create their own content, their own messages that they then bring to the media that then can disperse the messages. So we give them the skills to create technology-related product that can be distributed.
And then do you produce mock programs?
We have programs that come out of our studios that the students produce, and we oversee them. And so we now have a student that does a weekly talk show, sort of patterned on The View from television, that she is a producer for, and she arranges all of the guests and does the production for it and editing. And so she has the ability to use our equipment to fulfill her goal of learning to be a producer, which is what she wants to do when she gets out.
I'm sure you've kept track of your alumni from the department. Do you have some who are very active in radio and television?
We do have some, certainly. They've gone on to careers in working for CNN, working for television stations as reporters, working on radio in Macon, just the most recent ones that I've thought of. But yeah, they certainly aspire to work in the media. That's one part of our program at Bernal. We have other sections like public relations and journalism that students also go into. But we do have a number of dedicated students that eventually wind up working in the media.
Getting into radio or television broadcasting might be one of the tightest markets around. I had a good friend whose son graduated in broadcast journalism from the University of Georgia with an idea that he wanted to be a sports television broadcaster. Mm-hmm. So for over a year, this graduate of the Grady School of Journalism, this graduate sent out resumes, went for interviews, and at the end of a year, he had one station that said to him, if you come and work for us for free for a year on an internship basis, we'll then consider whether to hire you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. One of the things we require of our students is that they have to have an internship before they leave. That's a requirement of the program. And so that, number one, gives them skills to practice that they can, you know, sharpen up from what they have here. Also gives them a different environment in which to learn. Also hopefully gives them contacts in the industry, and so they can parlay those possibly into jobs. And as I mentioned, the one student in Macon, she did exactly that. She got contacts, and she was able to find a place in Macon where she started out low-paying, part-time job, but she's working her way up. You're right. There's a lot of demand for these jobs that are available. The people that have the jobs can pick and choose.
I've said for a lot of years, the more fun a job is, the more people want to do it, and therefore probably the entrance level is not going to be great compensation financially.
That's true. That's true.
Let's have Christina Rhodes, our program producer, remind us where we are, who our guest is today.
Yes, Bill, I'm delighted to check in with our listeners and let them know that they're tuned in to 89.1 WBCX FM, the voice of Bernal. You're listening to the Communication Corner hosted by Dr. Bill Lampton. and that's every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. with rebroadcasts Thursdays at 6 a.m. Dr. Bill's guest today is Dr. Stuart Blakely, chair of the Department of Mass Communication at Brenau University, and the topic is looking at television from every angle. Please notice that this broadcast and every broadcast of the Communication Corner appears as a podcast on Bill's blog. That web address is thecompletecommunicator.com. And now back to Dr. Bill and Dr. Blakely.
And before we rekindle our discussion here, I'll say to listeners, if that wonderful voice you just heard sounds familiar, probably you've heard Christina on two of her programs, Ocean Breeze, 3 o'clock on Monday afternoons. Christina, being the native Californian, loves that beach music, loves to get to the beach whenever she can. And then her new program, an interview program where she interviews inspirational people, Above and Beyond, Monday evenings at 7. So if you recognize that voice, that's why. A very distinctive, great radio voice, and a tremendous person as well.
Thanks, Bill.
Getting back to our questions, Dr. Blakely, I know that as you have watched television across the years, you've seen many, many broadcasters, some that you prefer not to have seen and heard. But I would imagine by now you have some favorites. Who would be some of your favorite broadcasters, maybe even some that you point to your students as excellent models?
Okay. In news especially, I think that's where the personality of broadcasters comes across. When you're acting in drama and comedy, you don't actually see the person. But in a news presentation, I think you get more of a feeling for what the person's about and how they do their work. And my favorite newscaster has been Walter Cronkite. And it's easy to point to him because he was there when I was growing up. And so many of the seminal events of the time that I was, growing up in, he was the person who you turned to cover those events. You mentioned the Kennedy assassination. I watched the coverage of that as it unfolded on the air. He was famous for his space flight coverage. He's the only newscaster who ever was awarded a moon rock by NASA because of his coverage. Also, when he was involved in the Nixon fiasco, then that was another one where he was the head of the news reporting teams. And so he set an example of what I thought and what I've come to appreciate as coverage and news that was trustworthy. Yeah, he was the most trusted man in America for many years, they would say. So Walter Cronkite's a person that I point to and show students old tapes and say, if you want to be a newscaster, this is the best way you can go.
And that's the way it is.
And that's the way it is. That's exactly what he'd say every day. And for 22 minutes, that was the way it was at that time. I mean, the news is not like today where you have 24/7 news on various programs. It was 22 minutes a day of Walter Cronkite in the evening at 6 or 6:30. And he would be the managing editor of the show, and he would choose what information you should be seeing. And it was a nice representation of what the news was of the day, I thought. So you can't go wrong with Walter Cronkite as an idol.
Many people would second that motion, and many people who didn't see at the time his announcement of Kennedy's death. Practically every American, I imagine, has seen that replayed numerous times, and you could tell the tremendous emotion that he was feeling, and I'm sure the tremendous responsibility that he was feeling, and of course that was in black and white television. I'm sure, Dr. Blakely, that you recall that Lyndon Johnson said he knew that Cronkite had the reputation of being the most trusted man in America. I'm sure you remember Lyndon Johnson stating during the Vietnam War, when Cronkite started questioning that, I remember so well that Lyndon Johnson made a statement which became public. He may not have wanted it to, but it was, if we've lost Cronkite, we've lost Middle America.
Right. And it's true. He was the emblem of a Middle America watching the news. And he was, as you mentioned, the most trusted man. And if you see Walter Cronkite starting to doubt the administration's reporting of information, then that translates into the people watching it. And that was, I agree, a big part of the change in the sentiment of the Vietnam War.
Getting back to what I said at the first of the station about, first of the program about us both being at Ohio University. When I was there, they opened, as a student, a graduate student, the university opened the College of Communication, launched it. And to launch it, our keynote speaker was Walter Cronkite.
Yeah, that must have been tremendous.
It was a grand thrill. Mm-hmm. And of course, he gave a memorable presentation, absolutely perfect for the occasion. And at that time, of course, he was at the pinnacle of his career. Although I believe you and I can honestly say his pinnacle lasted a long time.
It did. He was on the air from 1950s until 1990s. Until he died in the early 90s, but he was on the air even after his CBS days, doing documentaries, doing shows for CBS on a special assignment basis. And so even though he wasn't there every day, you could still catch him periodically. So I tried to find those at all times.
And I bet many people have seen videos, replays of him as a war correspondent, World War II correspondent.
Absolutely.
Okay, as you mentioned, today we've got a proliferation of broadcasters. We almost ought to have a bumper sticker, honk if you're a news broadcaster.
There you go.
So many of them today. Looking back across all time, Cronkite is your favorite. Would you select one today that you, certainly not a Cronkite replacement, as we say, maybe tritely, but mm-hmm. he was an icon. Which current television news broadcaster do you benefit from watching?
I like Brian Williams. I think he's somewhat in the Cronkite mold. He is, I think, very believable, which Cronkite was, you know, extremely believable. I think he does a very good job of giving perspective to the stories that he sets up. When he goes on location, I think he does a very good job of gathering and delivering information. So when I watch evening news, I'll watch Brian Williams.
One more thing before we leave. Past broadcasters, I would have to put in my favorite, Peter Jennings.
Peter Jennings was very good as well, yes. He was another one, I think, that was to the point. You didn't see a lot of embellishment from him. And that's what I like. I like to see the news delivered in a neutral fashion and let the people watching it decide for themselves, rather than what you see today where you have one side or another being taken by a network as a policy. And that policy then filters the news and gives it to the people without allowing them to decide for themselves. And I'd rather not go that road. I'm more of a traditionalist with the news should be delivered in an impartial fashion. Let the people decide what they think about it.
I'm allowed to mention a book on here if I didn't write it or if you didn't write it. And so I'd like to recommend a biography of Peter Jennings. It's mm-hmm. entitled Peter Jennings, A Reporter's Life. It came out very shortly after his death. And also, you, Dr. Blakely, have probably read the autobiography that Walter Cronkite wrote. That's very well worth reading as well.
I have that one. I wish I had it autographed by him, but I don't.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, having observed television for, as you said, four decades, over the last decade or so, what would you look on as the most positive advances in television broadcasting?
I'd have to look at technology. I think technology has just gone by leaps and bounds in the last 10, 15 years, and I'm really kind of excited about it, even though I've been around it for so long, because it's improving all the time. And with digital broadcasting now, our station here has benefited from that. You get digital television now, which is gives you crisper, better pictures. It gives the whole conversion to digital broadcasting allows for more streams of information to be delivered to the public, not just because it's cable, but because there are sidebands that can be used for other things on radio as well as television. And so the technology is always moving along, and it's always getting better, and it's exciting and fun to watch. I like to play, as I say, with the toys of television, the cameras and the equipment and the broadcasts. And so when those things advance, I find that very interesting, and I like to incorporate that into instruction. I like to use it in my personal life. And the technology is just keeps moving along, and I wish I could live forever so I could see all the things that are going to come.
What amazes us is just when we think we've gotten it to its best point, something else comes along, like HD television,
right.
And we say, well, we thought we were watching good television.
And we were.
Yeah, we were. Good, clear pictures. Yogi Berra has so many well-known sayings, one of which it's very hard to predict, especially about the future.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and, but I'm going to ask you, we've seen all these revolutionary changes in technology. Would you have any guess what might come next in technology improvements that would benefit viewers?
Well, 3D TV now is available. 3D TV is another one of those things where you just look at it and you go, wow, you know, why have we had this for 50 years? Because it's great to watch.
How is it available?
Well, you have to buy a special receiver. You have to get the glasses to wear these days. And then there are some programs that are broadcast in 3D TV. And so if you watch it in on a regular TV, it just looks like regular television. But if you have a 3D TV set that detects the 3D signal, then it will look like that offset blurry vision that you've seen when you take the glasses off in the theater. But you put the glasses on, and it transforms it into a three-dimensional image that you look, you know, you can reach into it sort of thing and, you know, see what's going on in great depth. And I've watched a few things on that, and especially sports are just fantastic. You can watch the sports, and it's almost like being there. It's getting close.
I was going to make that comment. I would imagine for a sports fan, 3D television would be magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
As you say, you're practically in the game yourself,
right,
as you're watching it.
The next thing I want to see, hopefully they'll create it fast enough for me, is holographic television. There has been...
What is that?
Well, that's where you get not the 3D image coming from the set, but there actually would be an image of something physically in your room that you could walk around, and it's just like the image of the person standing in your front room. And so what happens is that they have actually had a transmission of holographic television. I think it was in 2008, where during the course of the political campaign, there was on CNN a reporter in New York talking to a reporter in Washington, D.C., and the reporter in New York was holographically present in Washington, D.C. They did it in a way such that it's not physically or economically possible to do it currently, but the technology could reproduce that kind of an image. They had like 39 cameras surrounding this person so they could get an image of the person from all sides. And then they projected it into the room where the Washington correspondent was, and he walked around the person. It was fascinating to watch.
I'm just wondering, would that have anything to do with those movies that we started seeing long ago where one person would play a twin, that would be both, and you'd see them together in the room? Was that where that type of technology started?
No, the technology didn't start there. The concept starts there, but the technology is completely different. You can do that currently with video equipment, you know, make a person appear twice in the same room at the same time. That's done all the time, or it's very easy. You know, the twins talking to themselves when it's only one person, that's very easily done these days. But the holographic TV is not there yet, unfortunately.
So many incredible changes. When we come back after the break, you have just answered the question, what are the most positive advances in television in the last decade? When we come back after the break, Dr. Blakely, I'm going to ask you, what are some of the biggest mistakes in television broadcasting in the last 10 years? We're doing the good news, bad news approach. Christina, catch us up on where we are and what we're doing, please.
Sure. Reminding our listeners that they're tuned into 89.1 FM WBCX, the voice of Brenau. And you're listening to the Communication Corner now, hosted by Dr. Bill Lampton, broadcasted Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. live and a rebroadcast Thursdays at 6 a.m. This morning, we're speaking with Dr. Stuart Blakely, chair of the Department of Mass Communication here at Brenau University. And the topic is looking at television from every angle. And, speaking of, This kind of technology, it is going to be from every different angle, it sounds
That's
like.
Right.
Please notice that this broadcast and every broadcast of the Communication Corner appears as a podcast on Bill's blog. You can find that at thecompletecommunicator.com. We're going to take just a short break.
To contact WBCX, you can call 770-538-4744. Or you can visit us on the web via Facebook, Twitter, and our website at brnell.edu/WBCX.
Extraordinary Lives from Brnell University.
I had everything going for me. A husband, a child, and a job I loved. And then things just fell apart. I got divorced, and suddenly my job as a teacher's assistant could no longer pay the bills. It was a terrible blow, but I didn't feel self-pity. Only this overwhelming sense that this was my life, and I wanted to make it the best life I could for me and my son. So I went back to school and enrolled in Brnell University. At Brnell, I found classrooms full of people just like me, motivated adults who wanted to better their careers and their lives. In 1 year, I'll be a licensed school teacher with my own first grade classroom. Life can knock you down, but you can change that life. At Brnell University, you can make your life extraordinary.
Now with two Atlanta campuses, Norcross and Fairburn, as well as Gainesville and online, register at gobrnell.com. That's GOBRENAU.com. Brnell University, extraordinary lives.
Hi, I'm Gail Dunn, and I'd like to invite you to join me on Garage Gab every Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. On Garage Gab, we'll find a way to help you solve your car dilemmas and save you money. Again, that's 9 a.m. on Wednesday mornings here on the Voice of Brnell.
I don't know about you, but I just love books. And there's thousands of good, used, gently handled and loved books available at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market Building on the square in downtown Gainesville. Next Chapter Bookstore is operated by Our Neighbor and offers housing and opportunities for men and women with disabilities. If you need more space for some more loved books, you can donate as well. Bring them by, and they'll be glad to help you. Look for more books and good books at the Next Chapter Bookstore in the Main Street Market, on the square in downtown Gainesville.
Senior Issues is a radio show devoted to promoting quality issues to help our seniors maintain or improve their quality of life. Also, the show could help those with seniors in their family be aware of the various issues that would affect both them and their loved ones. Showtime is 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Thursday, and yes, we are live. We will cover a wide range of subjects over the course of time. If you have a subject that you would like discussed, or if you know of an event that our listening audience should be aware of, call me at 770-380-9727. This is Charles White, Certified Senior Advisor. I hope that we can add you to our listening audience.
You have a mission. It's no collision. Hold the phone. Don't text. You're angling to be next. Brothers and sisters, you won't see it coming. You're off the road. Your life explodes. It's not worth it. Don't do it. You only think there's nothing to it. Put it down. Hang up. Pay attention to highway action. Behind the wheel, there is no such thing as a small distraction. Join the conversation at DecideToDrive.org, a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons.
Hi, I am Ricardo Boyer, host of Embracing Health. Every Friday at noon, we talk about various topics related to your health and well-being, empowering you to make positive changes in your life. So, join me Fridays at noon here on 89.1 WBCX, the voice of Brnell.
Welcome to the second half of the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton on WBCX 89.1 FM, broadcasting Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. live, rebroadcasting Thursday mornings at 6 a.m. Our guest today, Dr. Stuart Blakely, head of the Mass Communications Department here at Brnell University, the home of WBCX FM. Most interesting first half hour, Dr. Blakely, and this one's going to be scintillating as well. We've talked a couple of minutes ago about what are the most positive advances in television in the last decade. And now to do the good news, bad news approach, what changes in television broadcasting in your judgment, have been the biggest mistakes during the past 10 years?
Well, mistakes, I think I'd have to qualify the whole concept of reality programming as something which has not been beneficial for television. I like to see the comedies, the dramas, the plot lines develop in stories that are written rather than having people reacting to eating bugs or being put in some untenable situation.
That really bugs you, doesn't it?
Yes, I know. Yeah. that the people have to get out of, and we are basically voyeurs watching their experiences and living vicariously through them rather than doing it ourselves or watching something which has perhaps a little bit more thought and production put into it.
Maybe Newton Minow was right, a vast wasteland.
He was just 30, 40 years early, I think.
Right.
It's degenerated since then, certainly.
Well, I don't know about your life, Dr. Blakely, but that's what they describe on there is not my reality.
No. It's well, of course, everybody knows it's not real television anyway. It's managed television, and it's edited so you don't see the humdrum things that they go through. You see the, quote, exciting parts or the more interesting parts. So reality is a manufactured term for the television environment.
Astonishingly, these people become celebrities. They eventually may get their own reality show.
Just perpetuates itself, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. They're interviewed in the major magazines. Mm-hmm. They're in People magazine and others. They definitely get their 15 minutes, maybe more.
They're on the morning talk shows the night after they've been thrown off the island so that they can perpetuate, again, more programming based on reality shows.
I'm with you. I think that we talk about zenith and nadir. That is the nadir of current television.
So far. Hopefully they don't go any further down.
So far. On the more positive side, again, what's your evaluation of television's coverage of the earthquake in Japan and its unbelievable aftermath?
It's riveting, I think. It's one of those events where you want to watch to see what's going on. Again, to share the situation, I think, with the community. The coverage, I think, by the people involved has been in part heroic, has been in part very satisfying in terms of explaining what goes on there. I thought that the reporters did a very nice job of saying why it happened, how it happened, and then predicting as much as possible the consequences, the immediate consequences of what was going to happen to the people there. And so as it has developed, I think that the newscasters and the experts that they have brought to the stage have done a very good job of letting the people around the world know what's going on there. Now, of course, there are some problems with the coverage because you can't send the reporters into the zones which are radioactive, and they can't get in close enough to give you the live coverage of some of the things you might want to see. But given that restriction, I think they've done a very good job of seeing the emotion, seeing the technology that is being used to conquer the problem, of discussing the problems of the technology that is bringing on the problems of the nuclear problems that they're having there, basically.
This gets back to what I said at the outset. This will be one of those events which, as long as we live,
yes,
we probably will remember where we were when we first saw it on
right.
television.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the longer you live, the more of these type of events happen. And so you can go back to your youth and say, I was there, you know, in watching television, and that sort of brought a community to the people that I knew. And then that was the thing that was discussed, and that was the thing which was the important event of the day. And these events rise and fall as they happen, and people ascribe different amounts of importance to them. But you're right, this is one of those events that people will be talking about and discussing and remembering where they were when they saw it. 9/11, you can go back and talk to people about that. You can go back into the 80s and there's a seminal event there. Some people will choose, I remember where I was when Kurt Cobain died. It affected them because
Elvis.
They were Elvis. If you got to go back further, it just depends upon what your interests are, and something that affects you then when it's shown on television brings your community of people together with something that they can share, they can talk about, and it builds the rapport among the people who share your values.
I happen to be a long-time active golfer. Sometimes it's an alleged golfer, but I'm a long-time golfer. I think back to how television and Arnold Palmer at the Masters came at exactly the right time.
Arnie's Armies.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And television made the Masters what it is. Arnold's personality helped that. They merged at and sort of a perfect conglomeration.
Right. Sometimes you get people who are media savvy, and the media just loves them for some reason or other. They have that personality that comes across that clicks. Palmer was one of them. And you can, again, point to those people who at various parts in time have been darlings of the media just because of their personality and the way they have exploited or made the best use of that gift.
I think another sports figure would be Frank Gifford.
Yes. Again, if you're sports-oriented, you could name a number of them. If you're news-oriented, you can name a number. If you're the various categories of people that appear on television, actors, actresses, the same sort of thing. They just come across well on TV because of something they have. As if you go back far enough, Clara Bow in the early 1920s was the it girl. She had it. Whatever it was, she had it. And that's what brought her to prominence, and people have had that throughout the years.
This reminds me of something quite relevant, and that is getting back to Ohio University. I imagine you're familiar with the fact that Roger Ailes is a graduate of the School of Communication. Roger Ailes, of course, the founder and chairman of Fox News. In his book, You Are the Message, he has something I'd like your response to. He said that at one point in his career, he had the job of hiring television anchors. He had a most unusual way of doing that, which he tells in that book, You Are the Message. He said he would go into a city to audition a television anchor. Let's say it was Baltimore. Mm-hmm. He would check into a hotel room at the 6 p.m. or 11 p.m. news or whenever that broadcaster was going to come on. He would cut on the television, but he would cut off the sound.
Just to see how they looked, sure.
Yes. He said, if after 5 minutes I have not seen something that makes me want to cut on the sound, I will not recommend this broadcaster, which tells us that the nonverbal part has a lot to do with it, too.
Sure. And I've been in similar situations talking with people who appear on television and say, you know, how can you tell if a person is going to be good on television? You really can't until they get there, number one. And number two, once they get there, you should be able to tell within a very short period of time whether they come through, whether they pop off the screen, whether they have that kind of instant communication that television loves so much. And, you know, when you look for, I've been in the situation where you look for a news anchor and they would send you tapes of their work to see if you like their work. And you could tell the first 25 seconds you put it in, you look at the tape, you say, yep, that's good. Or no, that's not going to work. It's an emotional reaction as much as anything. They may be the greatest correspondents, best writers, but if they don't come across on the screen, they're just not going to work.
Recently, I spoke in an organization that showed me a new video that they had produced about the organization, which went on their website. They said that the narrator for the video was chosen from among 45 voices that they listened to. They said all of the voices were good professional voices, or they wouldn't have gotten to the stage that they would be listening to them. But there had to be a perfect fit with what they were trying to portray with the institution. All of this goes back, whether we're talking visually or whether we're talking vocally, that it is true, the old bit. In fact, Roger Ailes says at the start of his book, you have from 7 to 17 seconds to make your first impression, right. And it's going to be a lasting impression.
Absolutely. That's the, you know, people will judge you first on your looks and your appearance, and then they'll stick around if they like you enough, and then they will see if you know what you're talking about. And so those first interpersonal experiences that will set the tone, and if there's some a reason that they're not attracted to you, they'll switch the channel.
Our guest today certainly knows what he's talking about, Dr. Stuart Blakely. Our guest next week will know what he's talking about. Give us a forecast on that, please, Christina.
Certainly, Bill. Next week's guest is someone I have heard you mention frequently on this program, Terry Brock, based in Orlando, Florida. Terry will share about leveraging technology to build relationships. Terry Brock has emerged as a renowned expert in technology and in creating career-promoting networks. I know, Bill, that you're excited to host him, and I'm sure our listeners will learn how to bolster their careers through wise use of the latest technology available. And you can be sure that I join our listeners in looking forward to Terry Brock's comments in the Communication Corner next Tuesday at 9 a.m.
I guarantee a program that everybody will benefit from. Speaking personally, Terry has been a wonderful coach, mentor, friend. I know him very well. I've heard him present on many occasions. It's an absolute delight to host him, and I know that many are going to benefit from that. Getting back to today's expert guest, Dr. Stuart Blakely, Department of Mass Communication Chair at Brenau University. Dr. Blakely, something we haven't talked about, but it's a very important part of television, is the rising cost. You noticed, as Christina did and all of us did, that the Super Bowl ads this year, a 30-second ad, cost $3 million. I noticed just yesterday on the Internet that NBC says, well, you thought that price was something, stick around. Next year, the price for the Super Bowl ad is jumping to $3.5 million per 30 seconds. I heard a couple of newscasters trying to do the math on how many Nike shoes you would have to sell to even break even for that. What do you think of astronomical cost like that, and even the cost of producing any 30-minute television program or one-hour program?
Well, the first result is the cost of Nike shoes is going to go up. I mean, just to cover the cost of the advertising for their product. You know, it's a business decision that is being made. And the people like Nike and Coca-Cola and Budweiser and all the advertisers think that they're spending their money wisely. Now, whether they are or not is another question. You'd have to look down the road to see if their advertising revenues have gone up because of the exposure in the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is the place to go if you are going to be seen by the most people, obviously. And so, you know, somebody once famously said 50% of all advertising dollars is well spent, and we don't know what happens the other 50%. And so
we just wish we knew which 50%.
That's right. That's exactly right. Which 50%, then they could only spend the good 50%. But what happens is that the business decision is made to pay the price. And if they didn't want to pay the price, then NBC or Fox or whomever couldn't charge that. So it's a willing business partnership. Now, whether or not that's a good partnership is the problem for the advertiser, of course. They must, I don't have the numbers, but they must feel that this is worthwhile, so they do it.
They wouldn't keep doing it.
That's exactly right. And so you're going to see the price go up and up until if it does ever hit a ceiling where the advertisers say we're not going to do it. And that would mean unsold commercials during the Super Bowl, and then the broadcast would have to back down on the price and get something that's more acceptable.
Talking about sports and football, I don't know how much of a football fan you are.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Well, then you can
college football.
You can respond to this question for me. I have been going to college football games as long as I can remember. A very, very long time. One of the things that I dislike so much is the way television has slowed down the game. For the person who's sitting in the stands, the long commercials just make you could shuffle a deck of cards and maybe play a hand of cards during the commercials. But in addition to that, to me, one of the biggest drawbacks is this bit of, well, the referees on the field, the field umpires didn't make a good decision, so we're going to have to replay that for 5 minutes upstairs and decide. What's your reaction to all that technology? Technology is great, but have we made the game too mechanized that way?
I would not agree with you. I like the fact that they get it right. And that's, I think, the final thing that should happen is people are fallible. They make mistakes. They blow a call. They'll not see something that perhaps cameras will see. And I think it's right for the athletes to get the correct determination. And if technology helps you do that, that's fine. Now, I would think that there should be some, you know, reasonable time frame in which it has to happen. 30 seconds, 50, 90 seconds, whatever. 5 minutes is obviously too long. But especially football is a game of stop and starts anyway, where you've got, you know, 15 seconds, 10 seconds worth of action and 45 seconds in the huddle and the play coming in and all this other stuff going on. So the starting and stopping doesn't bother me so much. I like the fact that you can see replays and they're made available to the referees, and the referees have a chance to determine upon better information the correct call. They don't always agree with what you see, which is fine, but at least they've gone the extra mile to see if they can't get it right.
One thing that I noticed several years ago, I got into a Georgia game rather late. I'm there most of the time early, but maybe it was traffic or visiting with friends. I got in there rather late.
Tailgating.
All right, I admit it. Walking near the field when the action had already started, you get the sense of how amazingly fast it all takes place. Up in the stands, I'm 55 rows up. You don't get that sense. But if you're on the field, it does happen with blazing, blinding speed. So you're right. And the angle that you're standing, how can a person really get that? I suppose I'm going to have to exercise a little more patience in the interest of fair play, which is what you're voting for. Getting back to newscast, something else that I would like your opinion on, and that is, we can be watching a very significant, in fact, almost a milestone newscast, and the newscast might be interrupted, and I promise I have seen it interrupted, because the newscaster will say, wait, sorry, we've got a news flash. Suddenly, you've got a car chase in Los Angeles, where it seems 80 to 90% of them must be happening. And so they'll follow the car chase. The other day, I was watching a major news program, being the sports-centered nation that we are. In the lower right corner, while the broadcast was going on, they were showing the basketball tournament. Is this diluting our news to have all these sidetracks?
I guess it comes back to your definition of what is news. If news is something that's interesting or important, then you have to decide if it's important that we see the white Bronco of O.J. Simpson going 25 miles an hour down the L.A. Expressway, or is it interesting to see that? And if the news delivers what's interesting and important, that's the first consideration. The next thing you look at is, do we need to break into a newscast currently and provide another piece of information, or a sports show and provide another piece of information? And I think in part that's being driven by the fact that if it's not going to be covered on the sports channel while they're doing some sports programming, it's going to be covered on the 24-hour news channels. And so I think that in defense of their own news credibility, these channels that don't have 24-hour news have to bring on this information as soon as possible so that people won't turn to something else and lose their programming that they're watching on sports. So I think that the advent of 24-hour news television has changed the way people present news on the regular channels, in part what you're talking about, breaking into existing programming to give you information. Now, if it's dramatic enough, if it's important enough, they will take over the program channel and present a newscaster. If it's something which, less important, less newsworthy, you could say, they may run a crawl across the bottom with the information. You see that with weather reports all the time. You'll get weather reports on the bottom of information, approaching tornadoes or something.
Very valuable.
And then when it gets closer, when it gets more important to the local area, then they'll break in with that news that say, you know, take cover because it's here.
That can be life-saving.
Absolutely. And so it's worthwhile to do that. You just have to know where to pick and choose. And I think it's gotten more prevalent because of the 24-hour news channels.
I'm going to mention another pet peeve of mine, which probably you're going to suggest, Dr. Blakely, that we change this from the communication corner to Bill's pet peeves. But this one I do again want your reflection on, and that is we'll be watching one of the morning programs, and let's say that they have Michael Douglas on there talking about his recovery from his throat cancer. And before he's introduced, they will say, this is an exclusive interview with Michael Douglas. To me, this is deceptive because this means we're the only people who are going to get to interview him. All this means, the way I look at it is, it simply means it's exclusive during these next 10 minutes. We're the only ones who are going to be interviewing him during the next 10 minutes. Do you think that's misleading language?
Yes, it is. I think I would agree with you there. But at the same time, it's one of those things that, again, is driven by the need to have ratings, to have something you can point to, saying what a good job you're doing by saying we got the interview first. And that being the case, then, it is a promotional gimmick, certainly, which demonstrates the skill of that particular organization for getting this information.
And in the news, being first with the news is primary.
Right. That's where you build your reputation, is being somebody who can get the news that other people are not delivering at that moment in time. And so if you want to find out what's happening now, then you have to go to that channel because they do it first. They give it to you first. And so you see all the time news channels bragging about the fact that they're exclusive, that they get the news first, that they're providing this information to the public so the public is informed first by their station. And that's where hopefully the ratings then will go. The people will then go to those stations to get the news as soon as possible.
We're winding down to our last couple of 3 minutes. Talk about the impact of television on families. When television first came out, we had TV dinners so that everybody could sit around.
Wonderful things.
Yeah, have a little tray there that we put our TV dinner on. And so I'm going to ask you, has watching television greatly reduced the conversations we have within our homes, or maybe has it even increased it because we watch programs together and have something to talk about?
Good question. I think it depends in part on the family dynamic, of course. How much is television central to the lives of that family? And obviously in America, it's very central. I think that it has great potential that's not always realized. The potential is there for discussion, especially among generations. But you got to be watching the same programming. And that doesn't always happen. My daughters watch different programs than I do. And they'll keep asking me, did you see that? What did you think? Sorry, I don't watch that program. It's not geared towards my age group. So it has the potential, I think, if you can discuss something that you have all seen in common. If it's not something you see in common, it's much more difficult. And you then get fractionalized or different discussions going on that don't communicate across the gender and or the age groups.
Sometimes in the communication seminars that I direct, I make the statement that in some homes, the only word that's ever said between the man and the wife is, what's on the other channel, dear?
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, that's common, again, because programming is geared towards either sex. And so you will have programs that women like to watch that men will sit through and programs that men like to watch that women will sit through. It's nice to have programs that both will like. You know, my wife has been long suffering when I watch college football and she's developed a taste for it. So I appreciate that a whole lot.
Okay. Again, this has been very, very scintillating. One final question, 20 seconds only.
Okay.
How wise is it to let the general public get in on the news reporting? We have stations which invite viewers to send in their amateur videos. Again, about 10 seconds.
Oh, this is a good in 10 seconds. Okay. I think it gives the people a sense of participation. It gives the news some information they would not have had without that participation by the public. And technology is the thing that drives it all.
Dr. Stuart Blakely, what a marvelous hour discussing television. I only have one warning for you. You're going to be a return guest.
I'll be happy to.
We have so much more that we want to cover and need to cover because TV is such an important part of our lives. We invite our visitors to come back to WBCX, the Communication Corner. I'm your host, Dr. Bill Lampton.